Mr. Karen Crawford, Louise Hara and Yvonne Ellsworth. That's the last in this current series of In Our Time. We'll be back on September the 25th. Thank you very much for listening.
Well, that was an edition of In Our Time with Melvyn Bragg, which was first broadcast last summer. The producer was Thomas Morris. And the current series of In Our Time resumes on the 15th of January. Now, on Radio 4 Longwave, our book of the week. Internationally acclaimed tenor Ian Bostridge reads from his new book on Schubert's masterpiece Winter Journey. Considered one of classical music's most powerful compositions, this song cycle for voice and piano, inspired by the poems of Wilhelm Müller, was first published in 1828. The episode opens with Song 17, Im Dorfe.
Es bellen die Hunde, es rasseln die Ketten, es schlafen die Menschen.
The dogs bark, the chains rattle, people sleep in their beds, dreaming of many things that they don't have, consoling themselves with good things and bad things. And early in the morning it's all vanished. Even so, they've enjoyed their share and hope still to find on their pillows what is still remaining. See me off with your barking, you watchful dogs. Don't let me rest in the hour of sleeping. I'm at an end with all dreams. Why should I linger among the sleepers? One of the lasting attractions of Winterreise, and one of the keys to its depth, is its ability to leaven the absurdity of existence with political or social engagement. In the midst of Winterreise's gloom and existential darkness, Schubert strikes sardonic sparks to light our way. The tone remains lightly amused, detached from this essentially bourgeois scene of sleepy wish fulfillment. This may be a different settlement and a smaller one, it's a village, than the town he left his girl in, but we are surely reminded of her family's wish to acquire her a suitable husband. She's a rich bride, we've been told, though whether she offers riches to her suitor or will attract them from him has been left tantalisingly unclear. The dreams, dreams of riches for many, no doubt, burst like a bubble come morning. All that seemed solid, to paraphrase Karl Marx, vanishes into thin air. The whole nocturnal feast has been but a baseless fabric. Schubert's Winter Journey confronts the winter we all face, the coldness we all experience, the coldness of life itself, but also obliquely challenges the social and political order from which it emerged and which, paradoxically, also made it possible. Schubert was not an agitator or a revolutionary, but trapped within a way of living which so often frustrated his ideals, he rattled the bars of the cage. Like Müller, like all of us who live in society rather than retreat to the woods, he had to make compromises with things as they were, but sometimes became acutely aware of and alert to his own capacity for an estrangement from political, social, and economic arrangements. Schubert's particular difficulties were not those which prevail in 21st century London. At the same time, it is difficult to sing Winterreise in modern-day London, or New York, or Tokyo, and not be struck by the irony of performing such songs in the spaces and to the audiences to whom we perform them. We all, performers and audiences, enter into an aesthetic compact, according to which we challenge, for an hour or so, our basic assumptions and our way of living. The confrontation embodied in Winterreise is easy to recognise, maybe even to process or rationalise. The political charge is easier to miss, but it cannot be historicised out of existence. We have hints of discomfort throughout the cycle, with that rich bride and her family in the second song, and the poverty-stricken charcoal burner of the tenth. It is here, in the 17th song, that a self-satisfied bourgeois world is directly confronted, a world that lives on dreams of possessing new things, a world that makes as much sense to us, creatures of debt and inhabitants, even prisoners of a succession of financial bubbles, as it did to the men and women of the 1820s.
Was will ich unter den Schläfern sein?
Some 25 years before Winterreise, in 1802, Schubert's great Viennese predecessor, Joseph Haydn, painted a picture in music of a wanderer in a winter landscape. In his oratorio, The Seasons, the tenor, Lukas, describes his predicament. Here stands a traveller now bewildered and perplexed, not knowing which way to turn. In vain he seeks the road, but finds neither path nor track. Vainly he tries to struggle and wades through the deep snow, only to find himself more lost than ever. Now his courage ebbs away. His heart is gripped by the fear of seeing daylight disappear and being paralysed by weariness and cold. It is all too reminiscent of our Winterreise wanderer, but the outcome, as one would expect from an oratorio dedicated to the virtues of social cohesion and divine purpose, is very different. After the doubts and confusions, after the angst, comes salvation as suddenly his eye is caught by the glimmer of a light nearby. For just at hand is a cottage where the wanderer will be able to take refuge. A cottage, moreover, whose warm room is full of villagers gathered sociably together in a cosy circle, telling tales, drinking, singing. Everything that is fugitive and unreal about Schubert's next song, Täuschung, is here made solid and consoling. Haydn's wanderer is gratefully reabsorbed into sociability. In Täuschung, deception, the presiding spirit is that of the dance, a lilting, graceful Viennese waltz, an echo of urbanity, but at the same time with something crazy about it, poised perilously on the edge of unreason. It's difficult to take on board the exaggerated anxieties of Schubert's contemporaries surrounding the craze for new dances and their rotatory motion. 10,000 to 11,000 deaths, wrote one, occur annually in Vienna. The cause of death for about 1/4 of these is consumption, which can be brought on by immoderate waltzing. This was a matter of ballroom dust swelling up and damaging the lungs, but the hallucinogenic, almost pharmacological properties of the waltz, the swooning and hysteria which we sense in Täuschung, were also routinely condemned. Donald Walker, author of British Manly Exercises and Exercises for Ladies, could aver in 1836 that vertigo is one of the great inconveniences of the waltz. In 1840, dancing masters were still relying on health officials to intervene when inexperienced young men and women danced too quickly. The great public dance halls of Vienna, the Sperl and the Apollosaal, had opened in 1807 and 1808, respectively, and the dancing craze was only intensified by the atmosphere and opportunities of the Congress of Vienna. By 1820, the police were concerned. Dancing establishments have mushroomed, and with them all kinds of disorderly conduct and other excesses, all to the detriment of nocturnal peace and quiet. Dancing was viewed by the authorities as a possible occasion of disorder. Dancing in Lent was an act which might be interpreted as seditious. A telling anecdote is to be found in the memoirs of the Viennese actor Heinrich Anschütz, which points to Schubert's particular love of dancing, but also tells of the repressive atmosphere which he lived and breathed. Schubert and some other friends came round to Anschütz's place, and soon the conversation turned to dancing. Schubert, who had already given us a few piano pieces, sat down at the instrument himself in the gayest of moods and struck up for dancing. The whole company is waltzing round and round, there's laughter and drinking. Suddenly I'm called away. A strange gentleman wishes to speak to me. I go into the anteroom. In what way can I be of service, sir? You are having a dance? It could be called that. The young people are jumping around. I must ask you to stop it. We're in Lent. What has that got to do with you, may I ask? I am Police Inspector X. Indeed. Very well then, Inspector, what am I to do? Do you expect me to send my guests home? I rely on your word that there won't be any dancing. When I returned to the drawing room with the bad news and mentioned the police, they all scattered in mock terror. But Schubert said, they do this to me on purpose, because they know I like playing dance music so much. Schubert loved dancing, and was often in command, animating activity from the keyboard, but not, it seems, participating himself. He wrote reams of dance music, 500 compositions on paper to add to the many that he apparently improvised in the company of friends and acquaintances. His friend Franz von Hartmann describes a typical evening of Schubertian entertainments, one of the so-called Schubertiade, which gives some taste of what Viennese bourgeois sociability in the 1820s was like. I went to Spaun's house, where there was a big, big Schubertiad. On entering, I was received rudely by Fritz and very saucily by Haas. There was a huge gathering. The Arnetts, Witteczek, Kurz Rock and Probationer Witteczek, and the painter Kuppelwieser with his wife, Grillparzer, Schober, Meyerhofer, and his landlord Huber, Tall Huber, Gahi, who played gloriously à quatre mains with Schubert, and Vogel, who sang almost 30 splendid songs. Baron Schlechter and other court probationers and secretaries were also there. When the music was done, there was grand feeding, and then dancing. At 12:30, after a cordial parting, we went to the Anchor, where we still found Schober, Schubert, Schwint, Derfel, and Bauernfeld. Then home. To bed at 1 o'clock. Sociability was at the core of a good deal of Schubert's art in this period, of the dances he wrote, and of many of the songs. The very same day that the first part of Winterreise was published in Vienna, January 14, 1828, Greiner, in Graz, also published his Grazer Galoppe for four hands and the Grazer Walzer for piano solo. For his last five or so years, Schubert continued to live and to work and to socialise. He lodged intermittently in the house of his friend, Franz von Schuber. He attended reading parties, late-night gatherings at taverns, and some of the social gatherings at which his music was performed. Often, though, in these last years, his friends and companions were disappointed. Schubert kept us waiting in vain. Some of the time he was in quarantine. Sometimes he was too ill to go out. If Schubert was a moody character, his syphilis can only have intensified this. When its symptoms were on the rampage, or the effects of the mercury treatment he underwent, losing his hair or suffering appalling headaches, and when the well-known and ravaging long-term effects of the disease possessed his imagination. Up and down, like the music, like his piano sonatas with their characteristic and sudden outbursts of rage, or Winterreise itself with its happy memories, cutting sarcasm, dancing rhythms, and profound misanthropy. He was most amiable and talkative, wrote Sophie von Kleil to Ferdinand Walcher in June 1827, but escaped suddenly, before anyone had an inkling.
Ich folg ihm nach die Kreuz und Quer. Ich folg ihm gern und sieh's ihm an. Das es verlockt den Wandersmann. Ach, wie ich so lind ist, gibt gern sich hin der bunten List, die hinter Eis und Nacht und ein helles, warmes Haus und meine liebe Seele drin, nur Täuschung ist für mich gewinn.
Ian Bulstridge reading and performing Schubert's Winter Journey. The pianist is Leif Uwe Ansnes. The book is abridged by Lawrence Waring and produced by Kirsteen Cameron.
Will Self, on foot.
I like to walk. You know, I do like to get down and dirty and be physical in that way.
Trying to arrive at an understanding of particle physics.
The idea that there's this 27-kilometre particle accelerator under our feet, I don't really feel it. I don't sense it.
Tracing the course of CERN's Large Hadron Collider.
I'm hoping that actually being exposed to the technology will induce a bit of wonder.
Self orbits CERN, next Monday to Friday at 1:45 on BBC Radio 4 and then on the Radio 4 website.
Well, now it's time for the Daily Service, led by Claire Campbell-Smith.